Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast. It's me, Joe, with you again, your casual comics guy. And I have somebody new with me today, my good buddy, Eric Hale. Say hi to the group here, Eric.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on, Joe.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on. It's not often I get a world-renowned author on. But Eric has recently published his book, All the Brittle Pieces, right? Am I saying it right?
Yep, All the Brittle Pieces. That's right. Published January of this past year, and sequel coming up hopefully next year. So.
And then as we talked, you're a big comic books fan. So I was like, hey, let's have Eric on. We'll talk a little bit about your book later. But I want to talk. I always got to do comics first. Comics first, business later.
Of course. That's right. Especially on new comic book day, as we are on today. So
yeah, exciting. Some interesting new comics out. I was showing you, I got the Spine Tingling Spider-Man #1. I haven't read it yet, but came from with in high regard from the guy over at Legend Comics and Coffee. So excited to read it. But Eric, you know, this is the first time you're on. Why don't you tell me a little bit about, like, you're like this, there's a whole panoply here of comics expertise. I'm just sort of a casual comics. I don't read every comic. I have a lot of knowledge from like the 70s and 80s comics, not a ton from the 90s, 2000, and more recently picking back up with this podcast and blog that I'm doing. What about you? Like, what's your like sweet spot of comics?
Yeah, I think we'll fit perfectly then, because my wheelhouse is pretty much like 90s and beyond. So I started collecting, you know, I was probably about 9 or 10 when I really started collecting in earnest. And you know, the 1992 X-Men cartoon, as many people my age remember, was like one of those things that really hooks you. But comic book related, I remember really getting hooked by Infinity Gauntlet when that miniseries came out back in the day. I picked it up at a corner store, and just all the heroes fighting Thanos and like just how epic it was, that whole story just sucked me in. And that was like the starting of, you know, then getting into Spider-Man and X-Men. So it was like right in that time when all those Image guys were in Marvel. You know, you had Jim Lee doing all that great work, Rob Liefeld, you had Todd McFarlane. So it was like the perfect time to just get sucked in. And then it just kind of went from there, and I'm still collecting to this day, to the dismay of my wife, because I have to store all these books.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we'll have to talk some more, because that is a blind spot for me. On a, I think last year on this time, no, it was actually when Marvel Midnight Suns, the video game, was coming out. Went back and read Midnight Suns. Did you read that? That was right in that era.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All that Ghost Rider stuff when it was Dan Ketch instead of Johnny Blaze. And right. Yeah. It, you know, and we'll get into this as we talk more about like, some of the stuff we're talking about today. But yeah, the 90s were an interesting time. It was just like such a, everything had to be edgy and the guns were huge and, you know, everyone was in sexy outfits. It was just so over the top, you know, so it's fun to look back on now.
Ouches everywhere. Something came up on my social media feed from another podcast, Comic Book Couple. I think that's her name, the Comic Book Couple. And they were at New York Comic Con, and on display was the original cover art for the infamous Rob Liefeld Captain America, where his chest is all out. Yeah. And weird, but like, we had to get our picture with it while we're here. It's a notorious cover.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. I feel bad for Rob. He gets bagged on so much. Like, some of it he deserves for sure. But he, you know, he was a pretty revolutionary figure back in the day too. But yeah, it's his style is very unique. You know it as soon as you see it.
It's developed. We'll just say it, you know, it evolved over time. Yeah. So no, I really can admire him as an artist while also still teasing about some of that earlier stuff that he did. But you hinted at it with the Ghost Rider show. We're here because it's almost Halloween. As we're recording this, we're still a little bit away from Halloween, and we wanted to have some Halloween themed stuff. Tomorrow night's the premiere of Werewolf by Night in Color from Marvel. And you said you just rewatched Werewolf by Night. We did a whole podcast on it earlier, but were you a fan of that that show?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I had seen it originally and just kind of wanted to rewatch it again since we were going to be talking about it. Didn't get to see the one in color yet because it's not out until tonight. But yeah, it's still, of the modern Marvel stuff that they've been putting out, it's probably my favorite, even including like the movies and everything. It just felt so unique and so different. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, and you hinted at it. You looked it up. It was directed by Michael Giacchino. I think I'm saying his name right. Composer, really. I think this is his first directing gig. And I read an interview with him where he said he started with the music and then wanted the visuals to match the music, like opposite how it normally happened. But he had a very specific vision in his head, and the black and white was so compelling and so stark in the way they framed everything. What are your thoughts about them colorizing that and having it, second year to announce Werewolf by Night in color? Because you watched the trailer, right?
Yeah, I did. I did. Yeah. And well, the interesting thing about him being a composer too is the music is definitely playing a pretty heavy influence in the film. Like they use music in a lot of really interesting ways and to bring up the tension in certain scenes as well. But the colored version, I'm a big fan of the classic Universal movie monsters. I'm a huge film noir fan, which inspired my writing as well.
Yeah.
And I loved the black and white throwback because it paid so much tribute to those eras.
Right.
But I thought it was also cool that doing it in color pays tribute to some more of that like 70s grindhouse style horror movies. It seems like that's the vibe they're going for, so I'm interested to check it out.
I hope it is, because I hope they did a really stylized color palette in it. I think he said he was going for a Hammer horror films look, which would be cool if they can
Yep.
achieve it. And I wonder how that big pivot at the end, spoiler alert for people who haven't seen the black and white version, it's a year old. There's a big pivot at the end where it does shift from black and white into color, and that has an emotional impact in the moment. I wonder how it'll be when the rest of the film's not in black and white and you have that moment.
True, true. And earlier in the movie too, the only color that you see is the bloodstone itself, right?
Yeah.
Even before that, like at the end part, right? So that's interesting. But I don't know. I think it'll be worth it. I think that I actually want to see a sequel to this. Like I'd love to see like a few of these different Werewolf by Night movies, or maybe even like a whole Marvel horror kind of branch of the company start making stuff. So.
Right, and that's what we're talking about today. We haven't even hit on it. We're going to be talking a lot about Blade, but I don't, not a lot of people know Marvel had a whole horror universe. Morbius became its own like joke for a while, for a
Yeah.
long while. But we're going to go back and reread some really old Blade stuff, starting with Tomb of Dracula number 10, first appearance of Blade. Which they had a comic series, Tomb of Dracula. Moon Knight's first appearance was Werewolf by Night. I think number, gosh, I'm embarrassed, number 11, something like that. But number 30, 32, Werewolf by Night 32. I got it now. First appearance of Moon Knight. I can't see it over there on my wall from here. But yeah, first, so they had like a Werewolf by Night. They have this whole horror monster universe that kind of people know the superhero universe and are just starting to get to know the cosmic Marvel universe, but there's all this horror universe that they have too that's interesting to explore. And I'm with you. I hope that they do delve into that further. Were you a fan of Moon Knight?
Oh yeah. I liked the Moon Knight show they did. I think that, I think they were trepidatious about it at first because, Marvel is so tied into like kids. Like kids also see all these of the Avengers and all this stuff. So they didn't want to like do too much shock value. And that was like the Netflix Marvel stuff had done some more of that. But I think there's room for it now. I think people are hungry for it. And kind of the formulaic superhero stuff is starting to wear on me. Like I'm a big fan of the MCU and Marvel in general, but even I'm not like super stoked on a lot of their new releases. I'm like, ah, it's just going to be more of the same, So seeing something a little different is always nice.
I agree. I really like their stuff that's taking on a different genre. WandaVision took on something a little different. For the first big chunk of it, Moon Knight took on a different angle. Having Werewolf by Night in that opens a lot of doors. There's a lot of sci-fi they could be exploring too. But
Oh, right. And there's a whole hidden history, right? Like, I mean, if you look at the history of comics in general, like outside of Marvel, like there were eras, there were Western comics were big for a long time back in the day. Then there was horror, like horror was everywhere. There was the Crypt Keeper had a comic book at one point. Like,
right.
there was so much. And so all these eras change, but what once was old is new again, right? You can go back and revisit some of this stuff, do it stylized like this was and update it and it feels cool to dive back into some of this old stuff. And then there's a lot of the back catalog that you can go, if you're interested, you can go and look some of that old stuff up too.
Yeah. Well, let's not keep the people waiting who are here to listen about Blade and our recap of Blade. A lot of people know Blade from the movies. We'll talk a little bit about the movies at the end, but we're here today to talk about Blade the comics. So we'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we will talk about Tomb of Dracula, number 10, first appearance of Blade.
The Casual Comics Cast is a buffet line of humiliation. Everybody gets a plate.
Last year, Marvel Studios introduced a terrifying new world of monsters. In 1 week, Marvel is unleashing Werewolf by Night in color.
Thank you for gathering tonight. So many death dealers with us for the hunt.
On October 20th,
I'll be rotting for you.
More terrifying.
Death is coming!
More gruesome. All in color.
It's time to show yourself.
Werewolf by Night in color. Streaming October 20th.
Ooh. So got you in the mood for Halloween comics now? Getting ready for Werewolf
yeah.
by Night?
Yeah, and I want to watch that in color one now.
I know. I'm excited, but let's talk Tomb of Dracula number 10. And it was kind of funny when you were texting me. I did not realize. I mean, it should have been obvious, but it's the 50-year anniversary of this issue. So this issue came out in 1973, written by oh my gosh, I'm dying now because I'm looking over here at something else that I should be looking at over here. Marv Wolfman, obviously, and with art on this book. Oh, Eric, when I do this on my podcast, it's so disappointing. I'm over here on my iPad over here. I got my iPad here, this here. But no, Tomb of Dracula number 10. What am I even looking at? Marv Wolfman and Gene Colan. Gosh, it's like two legends in the industry. Marv Wolfman. Actually, I had the pleasure of going to WonderCon this year, and Marv Wolfman was a speaker there. His panel, fascinating. That dude is amazing. He's written so much of comic stuff that you know and love is by Marv Wolfman. They had the whole litany of characters that he created. Blade's just one in dozens and dozens of characters you know. And my favorite part of his autobiography when he was running it down, well, the speaker was given his bio, was he wrote theme park, like eight theme park shows in his whole, like, his authorship. He's like, eight theme park shows, and Tom King, you know the author Tom King? Tom King was there, and Tom King goes, theme park show? He's like, what is that? He's like, you know, Superman gets knocked down and stands back up, and he's like, no, it was the era of Batman. It was Batman gets knocked down and stands back up.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, I love going to those panels are great because you hear so much inside baseball from this, and it's so funny when, you know, these old guys are like, yeah, I don't know. We just were sitting around having a drink. And then I said, what if someone got really mad? And then we made the Hulk. It's like, you know, it's so funny to hear all that stuff.
Which sets it up perfectly for Tomb of Dracula 10, because that's kind of, I mean, when I read this book, I'm like, oh, wow, they didn't have like this whole thing like Blade. It's like there's this, you're dropped right into the middle of this big storyline of vampires, and Blade just kind of shows up. And he is on the cover. The cover's pretty amazing, but here he is, and there's a good chunk of the book Blade's not even hardly in. It's all this Dracula stuff that's going on. So
yeah, I was confused at first reading it. I was like, where, like, what context am I missing? Oh, he's just here. Like, you know, it was kind of funny just feeling dropped right into the middle of it. But
I love comics of that era too, because they try and give you a hint where it's like, oh, you know, you got the call, and then the asterisk, last issue. Like, if you want to know what happened, go look at the last issue, because he called him in the last issue. And that dude in the wheelchair is it Wheeler? That guy's supposed
to... Oh, Harker.
Harker. It's the same guy from that, what's his name, played in the movie. I'm like, he was there day one also, Blade's weapons specialist.
Yeah.
So they kind of just drop you into the middle of this story. And it starts off with, you know, it's in London. I guess Dracula's in London at the time, and there's this couple that they're gonna elope, run away to America to get married, and they're immediately beset by like three vampires. And then here's Blade out of like nowhere with no context and not even for really any reason. And he takes him out with his teak blades. So his blades in this, like in the movies, silver. Here it's just like wood. He's got a wood knife.
Well, and you know what? I wrote a little note about that because I was like, it's so weird that they why not just say they're steaks? But multiple times over, they're like, you know, he mentions his wooden knives, his teak wooden knives. And I'm like, are they forcing that issue because his name is Blade? Like, they have to be knives. They can't be steaks. So, because otherwise he'd be called Steak and people would think he's like an entree or, that's what I saw. I was like, yeah, it has to be a knife because he's Blade, you know?
You're probably right. And it's interesting the way they draw the first time when he pulls out this wooden knife. It's like, it's got like a little shining, like bling on it. I was like, wait, is the thing made out of metal and it's just got an edge that's wood? But no, it's just these wooden knives.
And you know, his whole look is so of the era, right? Like I felt like he was dressed to like take out Dracula at 8 p.m. so he could make it to the disco hall at 10 p.m. You know, it was like, and his language too in the whole story is like so 70s. Like, you know, I forget some of what he says, but he's like, you know, daddy-o or whatever. It's just like so outdated when you read it now.
Which it's funny because I've read a lot of comics from the era and some of them can get very stereotypical. I never got that sense that it crossed that line though, where it was like he was speaking some kind of dialect that was he was using language of the era, but not
not a
racial type thing.
No. It was like definitely appropriate slang for the time, you know.
Right. Which was and it was interesting because I was paying attention to it because when I went to the Marv Wolfman panel, I didn't realize Marv Wolfman created the first African American superhero and it got canned by DC. DC refused to publish it.
Oh wow, I didn't know that either.
It actually was in Teen Titans and they made somebody else rewrite it and redraw it.
Wow.
So I was on like extra high alert for this Blade thing, and I'm like, yeah, they're dressed funny and they're speaking in 70s lingo, but not like over the line in any way. Like I literally Mark and I have talked about, when we read some comic books, even on Marvel's Unlimited app, they'll be like, warning to sensitive readers, you know, this is of the era. Some of these things may not be appropriate now or maybe viewed in a different light. And Blade never got there, which was kind of cool to me.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought so too. There was one line in this opening part with these runaways that Wolfman's like writing like cracked me up at certain points, but this line might be my favorite in the whole book, where you know, they're talking about escaping to America and then one of the vampires goes, "Forget your plans, youth. When you see America, you'll not be alive." I thought that line was so good for so many reasons. First of all, he calls him a youth. He like shouts youth. And then he's like, "When you see America, you'll not be alive." And I'm like, well, then how's he going to see it? He'll be dead. Like the line was just so incredible.
Right. That's hilarious. But I like the way the books are written back then. Cause I do like some of the, like, you know, they show you the action and then they describe the action too. My favorite part of Blade's costume, though, is the yellow. He's got blue blockers on. He's got those yellow tinted. I'm like, that makes sense. I'm like, I don't know whether that was a stylistic choice or have you ever worn those blue blockers? They do actually help you see better in the dark in some ways. They block out certain spectrum. Yeah,
I thought that might have just been like something that was popular in the era, you know, to wear. But
I thought it was a style choice more than anything, but. Yeah, he's got the knives all over. And so, you know, he mows down vampires as you do, and then he meets the dude, and in my mind I'm like, I don't know much about this character, Harker. I think that's who is supposed to be in the movie that's building his weapons and things like that. But either way, I'm like, is this a Marvel thing where any old wiser mentor has to also be in a wheelchair? That's like, is it like a Professor X but for vampires?
Yeah. Or like crippled in some way or something like that, right? They have to be with some kind of a limp or something. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and because it's weird because he's getting pushed around in a chair, but he's also got a cane at the same time. So he can probably walk, I would assume. Otherwise, why have a cane? Because other than like shaking it in his old man anger at Blade for killing these vampires because he's out there looking for Dracula and he thought these guys were going to lead him to Dracula.
Well, and so that was another thing in the book that really got me was like, all of a sudden this huge fight is happening and Harker just wheels up in his wheelchair like no one knew he was there, and he just comes out of nowhere after Blade kills these guys. And that one vampire had reverted back to like human form, and he's a child, like a young child. And Harker goes, "He was only a child," like admonishing him. And I'm like, it was a vampire. Like, what do you mean only a child? Like, Blade isn't just like killing children indiscriminately, you know? I thought that was so funny.
Yeah, it's interesting. I need to reread that because I took that almost as a when the guy reverted, he reverted back to a teenage form, and it's almost like a, oh, now you're going to be in trouble, though, if they find this. All they're going to find is the body of a teenager, and it's a teenager, and you murdered him. I don't know. You might be right there. But it is funny because he appears, like, sort of out of the mists, and nobody knew he was there during this entire battle where Blade's fighting three vampires. But it's not only him. It's the woman pushing him around in his chair, too, just standing behind him. She doesn't have a single line of dialogue. Yeah.
It's just masters of stealth. Who is this woman? Like, yeah, that was the thing about this book. It was just like, just leave the rest up to your imagination. Fill in the blanks, whatever you want.
Right. Oh, I was mistaken. She does have a line of dialogue. It's as Blade storming away. She tells him, "That man is positively the rudest person I've ever met."
Yep, that's right.
Like, that's all you can say about a dude who just staked three vampires. That is rude. He's rude. So then it's this smash cut. All of a sudden you're on this party boat with this guy who his name's Garbiel. And at first I thought it was like a typo and it was Gabriel, but it's not. It's Garbiel. Cause they call him Garby the whole book.
Garby. Right. And, you know, I wrote down some of the names in this book because they were so outlandish. So we had Gabriel Trulane. We had Clifford Graves, Charlie O'Casey, and Martin Scampt. And like some of those characters are literally in like less than two panels. And I'm like, why do I need to know their names? But they like made a point of saying like, no one treats Martin Scampt like that. You know, like it's amazing.
That's the way comics were written back then, which I have a soft spot for. And then you think of where do these ridiculous names come from? If you were a comic book writer, you had to generate like that many names all the time, you'd be really reaching.
Yeah. I'd be pulling out the name Garbriel for sure.
Right. You'd be like, let me just find a name and mix up a couple letters. And that's a name too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so on this ship, it's a party boat with these, what does he call them? He calls them fops and something else when Dracula's trying to insult him.
Oh yeah. Fops, so this might be a good time or something. Yeah, this is a good time to mention this because Wolfman just goes wild with Dracula's insults. And I was like hollering at some of these. So he says, "All fools, effeminate fops and mindless females." And then later on, he calls people senile cretins, mindless lackeys, dolts, incompetent idiots. And then this classic, he says, "You cannot think, peasant. Neither you nor your milksops you call your friends. You are spineless worms beneath my pitiless contempt." I'm like,
which is kind of
not hold back.
Which is kind of like insulting when you realize like he's on this boat because he's just basically there. He's almost like one of those celebrities that gets paid to show up at somebody's birthday party. Because it's like, it's all these rich people. They're like, "Oh, we brought you some entertainment before. Look who we've got. It's Count Dracula. Come on out, Count Dracula." And the curtain opens and there's Dracula.
And he's not like, it's not like someone playing Dracula. He's like, "Yes, I am Vlad. Yes, I am Dracula. Hello, everyone. You are rich." It's like so bizarre.
Yeah, he's got this whole BS story of how he doesn't drink blood and that's all made up. But he's like, "Nope, I'm Count Dracula. Here I am. No, I'm not a vampire." And then like six panels later, he's like draining somebody's blood. It's like, I thirst for blood. And this woman is like that comes by. It's like all of three panels where basically he just tells her, "You know, you're smart." And she's like, "No one ever said I was smart before." And he's like, "Well, you are." And then "You've never met anybody good before." And she's like, "You're a good guy. I'm going wherever you want me to go."
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was like
he's literally the first person to compliment her intelligence. And so therefore she'll do whatever he wants.
Right. And then like, you know, instantly, basically like a panel later, he's like draining her blood.
I mean, they only had 24 pages to get through a lot of story here. And then Dracula takes over the ship. And instead of just like hypnotizing the ship captain and making him do it, he like knocks him out and just starts steering the boat himself. I'm like,
right. Yeah, poor Charlie O'Casey. It's he just knocks him out, and the poor guy is like laid out in the cockpit for the rest of the time.
And he says right here in the panel, he says, "I need your ship, but not you." And I thought he killed him, but then later he did need him because he had him doing something else later in the book.
Yeah,
the image that sticks with me is Dracula somehow learned to operate a steamboat. He's back in the engine room. Yeah.
Well, and you know, the thing that was really funny, you know, he keeps kind of bouncing around the ship doing different dastardly things, you know, and every time he's running to one side of the ship to do a bad thing, there's maniacal laughter. Like, he's like, "I'm going to go do this." Ha 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 ha. And there's like tons of ha ha ha's like in the panel, which is just so classic cheesy villain.
I love it. But there's a good chunk in the middle of the book where he's just like doing this crazy stuff. And you're right. He's like, just insulting people and throwing them around. Not really, like, you know, he throws one guy overboard to drown. He half drains some woman. And then all of a sudden it's like, "Oh, here's Blade in a wetsuit."
Yeah. I'm like, wait, how did he even know this was happening? Like, what, you know, they didn't introduce that at all. It's just like all of a sudden Scuba Blade is there, you know, with his kung fu grip. And his teak wooden knives that are not steaks at all.
And that's my favorite part, is where, you know, like I said, that Wolfman was trying to use lingo of the era, but not get into urban slang, because he's in the water and he shoots this harpoon up with a cable attached to it so he can climb it, and he hits the target and he says, "Give the man a 10-cent cigar." It's like, all right, Blade's been at the carnival lately too, playing carnival games.
Totally.
And then there's a few pages. There's a battle. This woman that got half drained of blood comes back during the battle. I didn't understand how that affected the battle at all. Like, how?
Well, it was a distract. Like, so all I could see is like, she got obsessed with Dracula after he drained her blood or half drained her blood, whatever. So she was like, "I have to go be with Dracula." And then in the middle of the fight, she's like, "I have to be with you." And he's like, "Damn it, woman, I'm fighting on this ship of people. Like, this 70s guy, I don't know what's going on. Leave me be." It's like, so he wants her, doesn't fully drain her. She comes back and then he's like, right, "Get out of here." It was just so random.
I say she's half drained because if you haven't read this book, literally he drinks some of her blood. And then he like lays her on the bed and he tells his assistant, "I'm saving the rest for later. Keep an eye on it."
Yeah, it's like putting like a, you know, a half drank Coke back in the fridge. And yeah, the poor guy is like just sitting there watching this woman.
Yeah, because he gets torn because he hears, I mean, somehow all the people on the ship are overpowering Dracula. They got a cross and they're holding him down. They're menacing him. And the guy's like, "Should I go help him or am I supposed to stay here with this half drained woman? Which one am I supposed to do?" And then she knocks him out. And was like, "I'm going to my boyfriend, Dracula." And then you're right. And then she's like, he's like in the middle of the fight with Blade. And he's like, "Oh, now you're distracting me, woman. Get out of here." He literally throws her at Blade.
Yeah.
Just chucks her over there. And then he like turns into a bat and then explodes the ship because I think captain doing.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of where I like didn't know. First of all, I'm like, when and how and why did Dracula have these explosives? Why was his plan to blow the boat up? Like, what I want to know, like at the outset of this plan, what was Dracula? What did he want? Like, what was he really trying to do? I don't understand. Blow up the boat, drain all the people, you know, entertain folks? Like, it was just so all over the place. And then you'll get to this part, but yeah.
No, I mean, because it's like maybe you're right, maybe he's like, maybe Dracula is just like Joker and Batman. He's like, some guys just want to watch the world burn. He's just like there for chaos.
It seemed like it seemed goofier. Like it. He had like no plan, maniacal laughter, running from room to room, just messing with people, you know.
If he needs to grow a mustache so he can twirl it.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, he's a goofy dude. But yeah, no, that's like literally the last page. He planted explosives all over the ship, and I think he said he had the captain do it. And like, he's like, that's what the captain was doing.
I missed that part.
After I knocked him out. Because it's not his partner, because he just, and Blade's there, and it's like the boat's blowing up, and Blade's like, well, we ought to get over there. And the guy's like, I can't swim. And he just chucks it. He's like, better learn.
That was my favorite part, because basically he's like, the boat's going to blow. This guy goes, I can't swim. And Blade goes, no time like the present to learn, or whatever he says, and throws him overboard. And I'm like, okay, so Blade just like murders a guy just because he can't swim. Like, what is this? And he doesn't like gently push him. He like throws him overboard, you know?
Yeah, he's like, no time to look for lifeboats, no time to try and find a life jacket or anything. And I get it. If you can't swim and somebody tosses you in a pool, that's one thing. He's just chucking this dude in the ocean. Who's gonna, like, they're all in the ocean and this boat has now exploded. Where are they going? And Dracula's now is like, his assistant is like, hey, help me out. And Dracula's like, you suck too. Bye. Like, it's this laughter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's how it ends, right? Like, they're just all in the water, and then they're like, next, Dracula does some stuff in the next issue or whatever.
It's little bat Dracula flying away going, ha 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 ha.
Yeah. So God knows what happened to all those poor people. Blade, I guess, survives because he shows up in comic books later on, but all those people on that ship are probably dead. Who knows?
They were almost there. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't too far to dock.
Yeah. What you don't see is 10 feet away was the beach.
Right. So that's Tomb of Dracula 10, first appearance of Blade, and it's a classic. I had gone back before I read that. I read Tomb of Dracula number 1 just to get myself oriented into what Tomb of Dracula is all about, and it was very much a straight on horror comic book, creepy mystery. I don't know how they went from number 1 to number 10 of Dracula being like you said, just like a pointless maniac, like just agent of chaos.
Yeah, it seemed weird. I'd like to go back and read all the issues just to see how that evolved, but like most things, it was probably just like some editors were like, do whatever you want, Wolfman, and he just goes nuts, you know.
Go for it.
But I agree with you. I enjoyed it. I'd give it like a solid B+, just because like classic cheesy villain vibes and 70s motif, like it was really entertaining, you know. Kind of like a time capsule of the era.
It makes me want to look at the solicit for the next issue and find out if Blade's story continues in the next issue, because if so, I might read it. Or if it was just like, this was Blade's episodic, here he is, and then he doesn't pop back up for a long time. I wonder how this story continues. I guess there's only one way to find out, and that's to keep reading on Marvel Unlimited. All right, Eric. Well, thanks for talking Tomb of Dracula with me. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get back into the more modern era of Blade. I'm talking Blade, Sins of the Father, when we return.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Superman service at bizarro prices.
Now, one will lead them to conquer mankind.
Tonight, the age of man comes to an end.
We're going to be gods.
And one will try to stop him dead.
There are worse things out tonight than vampires.
Like what?
Like me.
Human.
Blade's mother was attacked by a vampire while she was pregnant.
Half immortal.
You got the best of both worlds. All our strengths, none of our weaknesses.
He is their greatest fear and our only hope.
It's open season on all vampires.
Open season on vampires. That's Wesley Snipes as Blade. And we're going to be talking in this segment about Blade, Sins of the Father, number 1. I wrote 1998 here. I don't think that's correct. I think it's 1993.
No, it's 98. Because,
oh, was it 98?
It's 98.
Okay, yeah,
because at the end they have a tie-in. They say, you know, if you want to learn more about Blade, see the movie now in theaters, which was 98. So,
and I didn't realize when we picked this book that this was the direct lead-in to the Blade movie. So if you enjoy the Blade movie, this is the tie-in book to it. By Mark Andreyko and Bart Spears. So this was a different era of Blade, and this is probably an era of comics that you know more about than I do. Like, what else? Like, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but like, what kind of were Marvel comics like in that era, like 98? Because we read this, the first book we read was from the 70s, which was a very definite flavor of you're going to get a lot of exposition. You're going to get everybody has a name in the book. And it was told in a very specific way. What was kind of that Marvel style in that era like?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting era when you're talking late 90s, early 2000s, because you still had some of the remaining fever pitch of people collecting. You know, you had, I'd say late 80s to mid 90s was just like everyone was getting books. There were the variant covers, the chromium covers. There were all the trading cards. Like everything was just, you know, going nonstop, and people were raking in the money hand over fist. But I think around this era is where things started to fall off, right? Like, I think I can really cite Onslaught and the Heroes Reborn era as kind of like where people started to lose interest and comics started to drop out of the mainstream again. And there were some good stories, but it was few and far between. A lot of it just felt like the same stuff. They were just churning out kind of cruddy stories, crappy books, and just nothing was hitting on all cylinders back then. Image, I think, was taking a lot of eyes off of Marvel and DC at the time because they were ramping up and getting super popular. I mean, Spawn was still huge back then. You had Youngblood, you had, you know, Wildcats, all those books were kind of hitting. But we're looking kind of at the downside of comics for a while, at least at this era.
Which is interesting.
And I do know that
it spawned one of the bigger Marvel movies of the time, and people don't think of Blade as a Marvel movie. They didn't back then. But like you weren't seeing a lot churning in the MCU.
Yeah, I think that was really that Blade Wesley Snipes movie was the first one to really kick off this new era of comic book movies. I think you can cite that. The first X-Men movie, which came out in 2000, is another one. But those were the first to start kind of generating more interest. And I don't know if without those films, we might not have the MCU that we have today.
It's interesting because it's what we're talking about. It's like everything seems like superheroes came in, hit a peak, but back then people weren't as interested in the superhero stuff as they were with, like, when did Spawn come out? What year did that movie come out? Do you know off the top of your head? Had to be near the same time.
I want to say 96, maybe 96, 97.
Right. So it's interesting that Marvel's got this character on the shelf that they had never tried anything with before. That fits into the sort of this darker R-rated kind of super powered kind of thing people want to see, but not necessarily superhero stuff yet.
Yeah. And the thing that I thought was interesting too, I remember even back then thinking like a Blade movie, Blade, he's like kind of a B-list, C-list type Marvel character. You know, he's not really the feature in much other than like Midnight Suns that you had mentioned and a few other things, but it was kind of an odd choice.
Yeah, because
those movies were super popular back in the day, and you played a little bit of the soundtrack there. I remember, like, in high school, people played the heck out of that soundtrack. Like, we'd be, you know, listening to it down at the beach, blasting it out of our cars and stuff. So it was, like, very in vogue at the time.
Well, it's a classic scene in the movie at the very beginning with the vampire rave and the blood showers come out. And the movie had its own thing, and it was interesting to me then to read this book. Like I said, and at the end, I didn't realize because like, man, there's a lot of similarities with this version of Blade to what you see in the movie. It's kind of hyper violent in a way that I think personifies a little bit of some of the stuff I've read in that era from this kind of line of Marvel books. Ties into the mafia, which I think a lot of authors do that now. They try and tie in crime families to vampires or werewolves because it's easier to have a big organization. You're like, why would all a bunch of vampires be hanging out together? Oh, got it. They're also going to run crime. So,
right. Yeah, totally.
But did you buy the fake out in the beginning of the book?
Which one?
It starts with some mobsters getting whacked somewhere. Chicago, 1926. It says in the title cards, and then a woman sitting at home waiting for her husband to come home. And he's obviously a vampire, attacks her. And then all of a sudden this woman shows up to like talk to Blade and be like, I want to help you get revenge. It took me a minute to be like, Oh, it wasn't the woman, it was the daughter.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I picked up on that. I thought it was interesting when Leo, the gangster that got turned to a vampire, when he comes home and he's with his daughter there, I thought that was kind of creepy. Like, if you had come home and you see the vampire dad there and she's like, "Daddy's here." And the wife and him had been separated. They had put that in the story. Mm-hmm. And so then he's just standing in the shadows. And I thought that was a good creepy little touch. But also, like, I have to comment on Blade's look in this too.
Oh yeah.
Which we'll get to, but.
Well, cause the next page you get to it and man, it's a 2-page spread obviously. And he's over one page of this 2-page spread. He is like huge and menacing in a way that he wasn't in Tomb of Dracula. And he's all in black.
It was such a trip to see the difference between him in 73 to this like obvious like late 90s look where it's like, you know, he's super jacked and ripped. He's got like an open leather jacket with just rippling muscles everywhere. He's got these super cool like pointy scent sunglasses. It's just like the epitome of the edgy 90s hero era, you know.
Right, no more knives, like stakes. Still got the grappling gun. Like clutches his fist. I'm like, hey, it's the same grappling gun he used to get on the boat. Give that man a seagull.
Yeah, where's his scuba gear?
Well, it looks to me like those pants are wetsuit pants because, man, those are some of the tightest fitting black pants I've seen in my life. Like you can see not only every muscle he has, but muscles that don't exist in the human body.
Right. Well, and you know, it's interesting when they do the little caption of like, here's who Blade is, right? Because it's a one shot. You have to kind of throw some of that stuff in. But like, they literally end that like backstory of who Blade is with, that's all you need to know. They literally write that in. And I'm like, oh, I guess that's all I need to know.
but you get more of his origin here than you do in Tomb of Dracula 10, which doesn't reference his origin at all. And in fact, makes it look like he's just some dude that is out there fighting vampires. They don't mention, which you get to, and you get even more of in the book, is that he's the Daywalker. He's got half human, half vampire. Like they said in the whatever I just played, he's like, he got all the advantages and none of the weaknesses of being a vampire. And he's just out there hunting vampires, going to town, super bloody.
Yeah. And like you said, he's no more wooden knives. He's got those metal stakes. You know, I have to say one thing that was a bummer for me in this was the insults got worse. Some of the insults are Einstein and someone gets called smart guy. And I'm like, man, Dracula's dolt. And, you know, all of those other ones were way better in the 73 version.
And, the
fop, mindless cretins, you know.
Right. But straight out of the movie is he's got that boomerang silver thing that he throws and it slices a bunch of dudes up. I'm like, hey, that's like straight. I don't know which came first. Like they must have had the movie about in the can. They're like, hey, we got this scene in the movie where he does this. Can you have him do this in the comic book too? Where he throws the blade and it slings around.
Yeah, this comic blatantly felt to me like just promotional material for the movie, you know?
But I don't think it was in a bad way though. Because like I said, I didn't really. It's not when I read it, I was like, oh, this is a pretty, I was like, if this is what Blade was like in the era, I definitely see how it came through in the movie. But then knowing that they wrote it specifically to tie into the movie, you can really see it because he's got the same weapons. He's got the same look. He's got the same haircut. He's got the weird, I didn't understand why when the guy tells him put your hands in the air and has a Tommy gun pointed at him and he's got like spikes up his sleeve that shoot out like a magician, pop into his hand, he turns around and throws them. He's got some really weird weapons because he throws it at the dude and it's not a stick or a stake. It's like a thing that impales the vampire, but it's filled with holy water and then that makes the vampire dissolve.
Yeah, I actually like that because, you know, usually you would just stake a vampire to kill them or whatever, but it was like basically a poison dart tipped with holy water. And I thought that was kind of a nice swerve. I didn't really see that one coming. So I enjoyed that part.
It's a nice weapon switch up. Cause it's interesting. Cause you always try and figure out, I did, you know, it's that season where I got horror movies on the mind. Did you see From Dusk Till Dawn? Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, where it's like, hey, their chests are surprisingly soft for some reason, which helps explain why it's so easy to stake a vampire through the heart just by throwing a wooden stick at him.
Exactly.
It wouldn't normally be that easy. But this book's a lot of nonstop action. What do you think of the art in this book and the way, like, just in general, how did it, like,
I gotta say, I know Bart Sears. He hasn't done a ton of work, especially recently, but he did the art on a Captain America and the Falcon 90s. I think it was a limited or a short ongoing that got canceled, but I really enjoyed it. And I think his style is so different. It reminds me a little bit of Sam Keith doing the Max and a little bit of Val Semeeks doing the 90s Lobo ongoing. Just kind of like a little over the top, definitely cartoonish in nature. Like, he's not trying to go for the hyper realistic Jim Lee look here, but it's very stylized. I really appreciate the art in this one.
Yeah, I did too. There's some to the plot. There's more to the plot than I thought there would be. It's a lot of vampire betrayal, and Blade comes out. You know, the one woman comes and recruits him with I need your help to, you know, kill vampires. I've read enough Blade comics to know that that's always a ruse, and Blade's wise to it by now. And he tells her, he's like, all vampires are liars, because, man, they pull that on him all the time. It is like the classic Blade move, which is a vampire comes to him and says, hey, I hate the other vampires too. I got a way to kill them all. Shocker, it's a trap. And they're just,
well, and he even says it. He's like, this is a trap and I don't trust you. And then he does it anyway, and it is a trap. It's like, dude, you just said that.
Right? So it is, it's the young girl all grown up, and her father waited until she was grown up to turn her into a vampire, made her kill her boyfriend, or so the story goes. But yeah, no, she's part of a rival crime family, and that she's using Blade to kill some of the rival vampires. Classic Blade. And then they're going to betray him at the end and kill him.
Well, and there's a scene here I have to bring up that I think that we might have skipped over, which is he has some weird dream sequence. Did that come up yet or no?
He continually does, where like he sees a pool of blood, and the shape of the pool of blood reminds him of a woman who's getting, is that what you're talking about? Who's getting drained of, like, blood?
Well, and like it's obviously it's the 90s, so it's this like huge busted lady in her lingerie for some reason being held by a vampire. But like he says, like, or someone says something about like him saving his mother. I'm like, wait, is this big busty woman being held by a vampire, is that supposed to be Blade's mom? And then it's like over, like the sequence is over and you're just back in the story. I was like, what was that?
It does make it seem like it's supposed to be his mom, but I'm like, that can't be his mom. There's no family resemblance there at all.
Yeah. And it was very strange.
And they didn't make it super clear that the vampire in his vision is, I think, supposed to be Deacon Frost.
Yeah, it was supposed to be, but none of that was clear. It was almost like that one, like, I don't know why. I feel like the editor was like, all right, it's the 90s, we need a busty woman in lingerie or no one will buy this book, put it in. And then he just did, and it was one page, and then the story continued.
Yeah, because in the vision, I don't think it's supposed to be his mom, because that woman kind of halfway comes to life and says, Blade, help me save your mother. And then he snaps her neck. I don't know why.
I don't know.
She would be the one that would be, help me save your mother. I don't know.
I bet if we asked the writer of this book, like, what was that about? He'd be like, I don't know. whatever.
I had a certain amount of story to get through in a certain amount of pages, and you got to take shortcuts
Yeah.
But there were some cool touches in there. I think the vampire with the vampire cyanide capsule was clever. Like, you can't get captured by Blade. You got to take yourself out.
Yep. Definitely.
So he's got silver nitrate in his fake tooth. Yep. That's kind of cool. Otherwise, any other, like, it like I said, it reads like a standard Blade book. He gets betrayed, and then of course Blade's not going to get killed. That same vision shows up to him, and it's almost like it's the temptation of Blade, because Deacon Frost keeps showing up to him like he's in danger in the second one, and they've got him tied up, and he's like, you know, this will make you stronger, do you want some blood? And Blade's trying to resist this temptation to his darker side to drink the blood and make himself stronger, yet he shows up at the end looking like a full-on vampire with pointy ears and everything before he starts shredding people.
Yeah. Well, and there's one thing, I always keep an eye out for some like cheesy little things that you could miss if you don't pay attention. But when he's breaking into the property, there's like, you know, the mobster vampire guards. And one of the guards, as he sees him, goes, hold it right there, pal. And instead of like shoot his Tommy gun, like he just gets sliced immediately in half. It's like, hold it right there, pal. Immediate death. I just thought that was a funny little scene there.
Yeah, like it is odd with their weaponry choices, because it is the one guy, when Blade throws the little stake at him, the guy's holding a Tommy gun on him. But I'm like, this is supposed to be modern day. This isn't like 1926. These mobsters, quote unquote, today are still using the same weapons. And also, I believe they're supposed to be vampires, or maybe they're just vampire thralls where they're humans. But then that means Blade's just like killing tons of humans.
Right.
I think they're supposed to be vampire. But they must recognize, they're like Blade is super tough. He's super tougher than me, so I'm not going to fight him. I'm just going to shoot him with a gun that I know doesn't kill him, because I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird choices. But again, it's a one shot, right? One shots are hard to get across with all this stuff, because you have a certain number of pages. You don't have much to go on previously. You don't have anywhere to go at the end.
If you never knew anything about Blade, would this comic have made you been like, oh yeah, I gotta see that movie?
No.
Right?
It was, you know, they tried to do the stoic lone anti-hero type deal. And, you know, the trope is great when done well, but this was mostly forgettable. I really just chalked it up to, it was promo material for this movie. If it was going to get three more sets of eyes on the film, so be it. But it probably didn't invest a lot of time, money, or effort into getting this book out.
Well, it's fascinating, because when I picked some of the books for us to read, I went online and I looked up like what are the top Blade stories you have to read if you're a Blade fan. And this was on practically every list. And maybe it's like, if you're a Blade fan of Blade in the movie and don't care about comic books, it's probably top. But otherwise, not so much.
So let's take it. I think for sure it was probably, it's on those lists because it's an immediate tie-in to the movie, which was popular at the time, you know.
Right. Well, let's take a quick break, and I'm going to get on my Kindle here to see if I can find the last book we read while we're on a break. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about, we've done Blade in the 70s, Blade in the 90s, and now we'll do some current Blade stuff of what's going on there.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Wow, that sounds terrible when you say it out loud.
You better wake up. The world you live in is just a sugar-coated topping. There is another world beneath it, the real world. And if you want to survive it, you better learn to pull the trigger.
Ooh, dark. That was the era of Blade that we just came out of. Dark, heavy, Wesley Snipes before all of his legal issues, the Daywalker. Now we're going to talk more about modern day Blade. And man, you had one up on me, because I thought this would be on the Marvel Unlimited app, and it wasn't. And you're like, oh, I already have the book. I was like, wow, look at that's dedication. That's like a true Marvel Comics fan.
Hey man, I wasn't getting beat up on playgrounds in elementary school for liking this stuff for nothing. I paid my dues.
So you would plan to, I mean, this wasn't like Eric's going to read this book for the podcast. It was already on your stack. So what was it that made you wanted to buy this book in the first place?
Yeah. I mean, really Elena Casagrande. I mean, she's the artist here, and she did the Black Widow series with Kelly Thompson that came out about a year or two ago, which unfortunately was canceled after, I think, a 2-arc run. But man, that was the sleeper hit book of that year for me. That if anyone wants to go check it out, that Black Widow series by those two are great. And so that's where I learned of Elena. I think she's really one of the best up and coming Marvel artists, right along with Daniel Warren Johnson, who did that great Beta Ray Bill miniseries a couple of years back as well. But I mean, just beautiful, crisp art. So stylized, reminds me a little bit of the of that Nyx series that introduced X-23 slash Laura Kinney. I don't know, 2 decades ago now or something like that. But she's great. I'll pretty much buy anything she does the art in. So
okay, well, now having read it, I mean, what were your impressions of the Blade book? This one I felt like had maybe even a little bit less plot than the last book we just read, which is interesting.
Yeah, it was pared down for sure. I think also, you know, the difference is the last was a one shot. This is, I don't know, an ongoing, a mini. I'm not sure if it's an ongoing.
I think it's an ongoing, and you know how Marvel does it. I think this story arc is 4 or 5 issues.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can tell that they're setting up more than just trying to dive into the meat of it here. They're set it up immediately with that action sequence at the beginning where, you know, Elena Casagrande, every book she does this like great double splash of an action page, which she did in every Black Widow issue. It's no different here. You know, Blade crashes his car into this club of vampires, and it's just a great double splash page of him doing that. And his headlights are, you know, sun powered, so the vampires are burning to a crisp as he's hitting them with the car. And you know, when he gets out, it reminded me, coming from the 90s issue, you know, we had the 70s, then the 90s, and then now, and he seemed a lot more of an action hero like John Wick than John Rambo. He was like way more John Rambo in the 90s one, and this right. one, he's, you know, he's trimmed up, he's not as muscular, he's very like kind of understated, but he's, you know, more ninja hero almost. He's got his katana sword and he's using it to cut people up. So
yeah,
I like this version better than the 90s version, I'll say that.
Yeah, that's a great observation. He doesn't seem like he's gonna stand toe to toe and punch you like roided outrage a Blade was going to. And I did think that splash was cool because it's the first time I don't know, maybe it's happened in the comics before, but him having sunbeam lamps as headlights for his car makes so much sense and is so cool. But I was like, that, I'm like, okay, you got me with that one. That's something I've never seen before, never even thought of before. I thought that was cool. Like, he's just frying him up.
I did too. Yeah, for sure.
Which is great. And it ties back into, is actually when we were going to talk about this, I was thinking back to some of the other Blade comics we read. And when we did a Black Panther podcast, and we went back and read a Black Panther series that Blade pops up in, because it's in New Orleans. And he's down there, and Blade and some of the and Black Panther runs into the vampire hunters, and one of the outcomes is they recruit Captain Marvel, Monica Rambeau, and at the end of that, it's like, you're like, why are they trying to get a hold of her? Because she can control the entire spectrum of visible light, and she just fries all the vampires with basic sunlight. It's kind of cool concept. And so same thing with these headlights. And then he comes out, he's more trim, and he's just more agile, which makes more sense to me than just a huge, like, jacked up muscle bound Blade.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think in the 90s, even if it was like a character that wasn't supposed to be, they were all, you know, muscled up, looked like they'd been taking steroids. And I prefer this Blade. I think Blade should be more lean, still a badass, but he's more of like a kind of a ninja build to me, right? I think even in the 70s version, he reminded me more of like those 70s kung fu movies than anything else. So Blade is not supposed to be Schwarzenegger, in my opinion. He's supposed to be more like this. And I liked the feel, like what they're trying to do with this version of him. He was definitely kind of a hard-boiled, kind of supernatural noir feel to him almost, which I love it. I mean, that's my wheelhouse. I love stories like that. So
yeah. Well, he gets called in on a case with this woman who it looks like the vampires had been hunting. And that's what the guy tells him. It's one of the werewolves that I don't know much about. I'm not up on current Marvel, the dark underbelly. You know, I've been reading some of the later Doctor Strange's, that after death of Doctor Strange, when Clea took over and there were all the magic mafias and everything like that. That was kind of cool. And it touched on some of this, but there's a, you know, it's the werewolf society and the vampire society, which is a classic trope. But I don't know this guy who calls him in, but they're looking for a woman, and all they can say is she's enchanted in some way and she's in danger. You need to go find her, Blade. And it gets into some pretty horrific stuff. Like the guy who's all just staked up to the wall with blades. And they're like, it was her boyfriend. He got killed. And Blade's like, well, he's not dead yet. And shock, scary moment.
Yeah, this was definitely more a horror book than the other two. You know, you could say the 90s was more action, and then the 70s, I don't even know. I don't know how to classify that one, but this was certainly like had more horror elements. And I've read issue 2 and 3 now, and there's even more. There's like it reminds me more of like a kind of Hellboy-esque occult horror happening in some of the later issues too. So it's clear that that's what they're trying to do with this one.
And I, I'll let you lead a little bit through if there's certain plot points you want to touch on. The art is gorgeous and there's just a ton of action in the book, but it feels like they're spreading the story out a little, and kept the story lean in this to get they've got the main players introduced for what the story is going to be, and I think it's pretty cool. I'm gonna wind up picking up this series.
Yeah, it's really this issue is setting the pins up, right? They're just getting everything ready. Let Elena Casagrande do what she does best, run with the ball. Let her just do these fight scenes. Not anything against the writer, I mean, but if you dropped out all the word bubbles, I would still love this issue. It's just beautiful. It takes you through the story regardless. I do love that one scene that she drew of what's the villain's name again? Do you have it down there? I can't remember off the top of my head. Like
Which
the
one?
Edenna or. So the girl that ends up being the villain.
Yeah, Adana.
Adana, right?
Adana, Adana.
Yep. When Blade is fighting the other warrior that he thinks is the bad guy, but he's really trying to stop this demon woman, and you see the four quarter panel of her face where you see her eyes, and then when she realizes Blade's gonna win, you see one that fourth corner. Her smile turns up just slightly because she knows she's won, right? And I thought that was such a great little touch.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And that's another classic Blade moment is Blade's fighting the person that he thinks is the bad guy, and it's just another he's fighting the wrong person.
Yeah. Blade is basically the biggest clueless hero probably ever. I mean, he seems to be just like messing up his own life every issue.
Well, I mean, this
Yeah.
is the second book in a row where it's like he's been like totally tricked and suckered into something because it turns out the werewolf was like he got pulled into all this, like, oh, we knew you couldn't resist this mystery and you were gonna show up and kill the wrong person, and now you've unleashed this terrible demon that can't be stopped any longer because we've taken away the one weapon that can stop this character.
Yeah. Well, and even in the 73 book where he's introduced, he doesn't win. He ends up on a blown up ship. You know, like the guy can't do anything right. And you know, one thing about this book too is the Adana. I think at the end it was kind of cool that they really showed what she looked like, and she just sheds her skin almost like a cocoon,
That was creepy.
which was like another great horror moment. So I think they did it really well. The second two issues after that followed, I really enjoyed too. I'm just curious where they take it and to see what else they're going to set up in this one.
Well, maybe we'll have to check back in when the first story arc ends and give a summary and a recap because I feel like I think it was either a 4 or 5 issue arc, and I think I saw issue 4 on the stands today when I was up there. So we'll check in on that. But any other final thoughts on that on the latest Blade, other than I recommend it for somebody who is a fan of that character and is looking for. I always kind of look for this. Is it a good point to jump back on? Like, if you haven't read Blade in 10 years or you're interested in getting into Blade, you don't have to know a ton about him other than who he is as a character and what motivates him. This is not, it is a number one. It's a good place. And not all number ones are, but it's not continuity heavy that you have to understand. You'll get context clues for everything you need to if you just pick this book up and start reading it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Blade is a character too that's been used so sparse over the decades that it's not like Wolverine or Spider-Man where there's just so much story and backstory, and Spider-Man to its own detriment. Like I don't even care about a lot of what happened to him because they've retconned it so many times, you know. But this, if especially if you're looking forward to the Mahershala Ali Blade that's coming out, I think next year or maybe the year after. I have a feeling this is the vibe that is gonna give off as well. So, good jumping on point. Again, with Elena Casagrande, you can't go wrong. It's just a beautiful book. So, I recommend it for folks that are interested in checking out Blade.
Awesome. Well, recommended. Pick it up if you're interested. great art. I don't know much about this artist, but I'm gonna try and track down some more of her stuff. There's certain artists that I do pay attention to. I more pay attention to the writers, but beautiful, gorgeous book too. So we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up, and we'll talk a little bit about your book, Eric, because I want to hear more about it. So we will be right back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We're not done until one of us can't get up.
Which is soon for me, because it's late here for me. And I have been pounding it all day with the prep for this, and finding those little sound clips. So overall, looking back at it, like which of these three books, like if you're going to go back and say, I'm going to spend some time in one of the Blade eras, which one is it?
Man, that's so hard. I would say not the 90s, just it's too absurd. It was probably my least favorite of the three. The 70s was fun just because it was so outrageous, but I really like this modern book. I like this modern take, and I think they've really nailed what the character should be. So I would say this most recent 2023 run.
Yeah, I like the modern take too. I would go back, if I go back and do the research and I find out that, like, literally if you run through Tomb of Dracula of that time, there's a continuation of a Blade storyline, I would love to check it out. My fear is that he just pops up every now and again, and I don't think he gets his first solo book for a long, long time, well after this era. But yeah, I mean, if I can find a run of Blade in that era, I'd check it out. But yeah, I'm going to stick with this here. When you look at it, like you referenced the Mahershala Ali movie, what do you hope they pull through to that one? Because we've seen the Wesley Snipes Blade. What of all the Blade stuff in the comics are you hoping translates?
I think, honestly, you could pretty much take this run, at least so far. I mean, I've only read three issues, but what they've done so far is they've nailed some of this occult horror stuff, which is perfect for a vampire book. They've nailed a lot of the action, which is cool for like the martial arts type swordplay, kind of people that are looking for that John Wick style, right? And the vibe feels very much like vaporwave, or almost like, you know, that Ryan Gosling movie Drive, which is a great, great film. I'd love to see that, like, just kind of capture the essence of what this book is doing, translate that to film, and I think you got a winner there.
I agree. So, more to come on Blade. He'll be making his appearance. I hope it ties in some way to some of the other horror stuff from Marvel. But overall, I had a great time reading these books. Thanks for reading them with me. Now let's talk a little bit about All the Bitter Pieces. When you and I met, I did not know you had or were undertaking this course, and you were telling me it was a little bit inspired by comics, right? So what do you want people to know about your book?
Yeah, my book, All the Brittle Pieces, published this year. It's basically a dark noir thriller that follows a main character anti-hero. His name is Caleb, and he's essentially a serial killer for good. He goes around the country trying to find abused children who have fallen through the cracks of society and saves them, and ixnays the abusers in gruesome fashion. So I tell people, if you're a Danielle Steele fan, then this is probably not the book for you. But I took a lot of influence from Sin City. I took a lot of influence from Garth Ennis's runs on The Punisher. A lot of those Max issues had a lot of impact on me, and some real life too. I actually, you know, have researched a lot about cases of child abuse and trauma. So I really wanted to say something about it as a real issue. I mean, there are 3 million cases of child abuse in the United States, but I wanted to create a story that was compelling and kind of spoke to the main character's own journey through trauma, through healing from that or not healing from it, and what the pitfalls of not healing would be. And then found family, right? I mean, you have a character who essentially I made is like, you know, Humphrey Bogart, if he became Batman, let's say, and he doesn't really have any future goals for himself other than this mission he's dedicated himself to. So along that journey, he ends up meeting a few people along the way that kind of crack him open. And he thinks, you know, is there more to my life than this? Is this grim mission that I put myself out on, is this all there is to me, or is there more? And can I even live a normal life after everything I've done and everything I've been through? So lots along the way, lots of surprises and cliffhangers and all kinds of things. But it was great writing it. Really enjoyed the process. And halfway through writing book number two that I hope to have out next year. And yeah, it's enjoyable. I love doing it, and I want to just keep churning out stories.
Awesome. So it sounds like it's a whole, have you got it plotted out for like 10 books now? You got it all, you done it, the MCU mapped it out on your wall for multi-year arcs?
Yeah, well, it was a planned trilogy initially, but I'm thinking of leaving it open someday for more. The problem is I have so many other stories I want to get to that, like, if I just keep doing this one, I'll never get to those other series. So at least three books, and then I'll probably switch to something else, but might pick up maybe a fourth or fifth book at some point in time. So,
okay, awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to reading it. If people are interested in it, where can they find it?
Yeah, you can go to my website. It's erickhale.com. That's Eric with a K, so E-R-I-K, then the letter K, H-A-L-E.com. And then you can also just Google search all the brittle pieces and my name, Eric Hale, and it'll come up on Amazon. It's on Kindle Unlimited for those that subscribe. You can read it for free or just $4.99 for the ebook right now. So.
That's terrific. Well, I am definitely going to read it. I've committed to somebody who should remain nameless that I'm going to try and do some writing of my own in November. So we'll see how much reading I can get in and writing. But, you know, it sounds like a fascinating book, and people should check it out. At least go. Will they find like anything on your website, like, or on Amazon where they can get a like synopsis or some pages like the intro?
Yeah. I believe Amazon, you can even read a whole bunch of the book for free.
A lot of times on Amazon, you can at least get the first 10 or 15 pages on Amazon a lot of time.
Yeah. I think it's even more, but I think like even the first three chapters or something you can read for free. But I mean, you can go also read descriptions on there, reviews. I'm proud to say I have a 4.7 star review rating on Amazon right now, 4.6 on Goodreads. So as a first time debut author without a lot of market penetration, I'm pretty proud of that. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Funny story about the Amazon, I went in and it was do you remember Let the Right One In, the movie?
Oh yeah.
You ever read that book?
I didn't read the book, but I'd love to. I love that movie.
I picked that book to read for a book club that I was doing, and I hadn't seen the movie. And I was like, let me go read the first 10 pages of the book or whatever, because I knew Amazon had it. I'm like, this is so strange. This is weird. I read like the first page and everything. And then I got the book, and I'm like, I actually like got the physical book. And I was like, what am I remembering? Why am I remembering something that's not happening? And it was like, literally on Amazon, when you got the first like 10 or whatever pages were free, they accidentally put the last page of the book as the first page in there. So I think I know, but what? So like, I literally knew the ending of the book because they accidentally put the last page as the first page of the preview.
Oh my God. Wow. That's amazing.
interesting book, but yeah, check it out. Eric with a K, khale.com. Check out the book. But it's been a real pleasure to have you, Eric. I really appreciate you coming on, talking about books with me. There's always a lot of fun. You know, I'd love to have you back at some point. Maybe you can lead me through something like Onslaught. I've never read Onslaught. So.
Oh God, don't. I'd love to do that. I mean, there's plenty of stuff from the 90s that is worth checking out. I also love to always do deep dives into stuff that people may not have read. They might've missed at the time, and that were stories worth picking up. So I'd love to come
back.
Got
any on the top of your head?
Thanks for having me. I think that I mentioned Lobo before, right? Lobo back in the 90s, the ongoing from DC, what like predated what people love Deadpool for, right? The super humor, ultra violence that Deadpool does now, and they've made so much money on the movies and the comics and stuff. That was Lobo before Deadpool was doing it. So I always tell people, if you like that stuff, go back and read the old Lobo books. They're great.
Awesome. Well, we'll find a book, I promise, and we'll be back. We'll try and do better, not so long between podcasts now that summer is over. But thank you so much for coming on. Got my Fresca soda. So Fresca, cheers to you. I shouldn't be drinking carbonated beverages during the podcast, but I do sometimes. So cheers to you, Eric, and thanks for coming.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter at Casual Comics Guy, at our blog, casualcomicsguide.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.